every single one of us matters. Every single one of us has some role to play.
The Sustainable Hour.
For green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. We acknowledge that we're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded, the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. We acknowledge that we will never have climate justice until we have justice for our First Nations people. They have been subjected to all sorts of trauma since they were invaded almost 250 years ago. The oldest living culture on the planet. Over millennia, they have nurtured their land and their communities, and we have so much to learn from that ancient wisdom as we navigate the waters of the climate crisis that we are facing.
This planet's such a beautiful thing, gives us all we've got, everything, life, love and laughter. And I want to see it beautiful for people and our fellow creatures yet to come. And that's not going to happen unless we make a stand for it. What a great thing to be alive and be able to campaign for it.
Former leader of the Greens, Bob Brown, speaking in the ABC's The Drum last week, where he was talking about this new Franklin movie, which is out. The planet gives us life, love, and laughter. And I just thought, Bob Brown, you are so right. It's so important that we don't just talk about all those things that make us angry, which I tend to do, I must admit, in the beginning of the Sustainable Hour every week, but also that we remember to talk about the things that we love and the things that make us laugh and feel good. And there's one word, one buzzword, which I hear more and more often coming up when we watch TV, you know, politics, the media and so on. And it's this expression, the well-being economy. And what's underneath that, technically speaking, is that the politicians want to move the talk away from the old paradigm of economic growth and move towards something where we focus more on our well-being, where we measure the success in society, not on economic growth, but on how well we feel. And the good thing about well-being is that those things that we can do that makes us feel good and feel well, very many of these things don't pollute the atmosphere with planet heating emissions and so on. So I think that's a start on that journey. Well-being is what the Sustainable Hour has been all about for almost 10 years now, how to turn every one of us consumers into little sustainability change makers. And that'll be, I think, also the theme of this hour today. But first, we need to hear a little bit about what's been happening around the world. And Colin Market, you have been scouting and scanning the news. And what do you have for us today?
Hello, Mick. Yeah, look, before I start, in the wake of last weekend's Father's Day, as I get older, I realize really that the important things in life are not possessions, and they're not status, and they're not the jobs that you fill. They are family. Family is the most important thing. Family are the people who see you as you really are. And basically, I can't think of anything better than having a Father's Day or any celebration with your family, not with gifts, but just spending time with family. That's the important thing. But having said that, this is my scan for the World Environment Outlook today. Our roundup begins with a report in the London Times newspaper, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, and it's not known for its environmental stance. The Times reported late last week that scientists in Copenhagen have released a new study that shows the melting of ice in Greenland is much further advanced than forecast. And as a result, sea levels are going to rise 27 centimetres, irrespective of our response to climate change, just from what has already melting and the rate that it's on now. The findings are drawn from an assessment of the yearly balance between thawing and freezing on the ice cap. They imply that the basis of the present rate of warming alone, more than 3% of the ice is destined to melt in our lifetimes. The data is published in the journal Nature Climate Change, and it paints a much bleaker picture than was predicted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And Professor Jason Box from the National Geographical Society of Denmark and Greenland said that in his view, the predictions were at the lower limit of what could be expected. It's a very conservative rock bottom minimum, he said. Realistically, we'll see this figure more than double within the century. That's a really bleak and startling background, especially against the background of the news media that we have, which is showing that the crisis of heat waves and fires across the Northern Hemisphere, really, across Europe and across the Western America, and then the Pakistani floods have added another 1.5 million people homeless and another 150 people dying in the last week. It was 33 million people homeless last week, if you remember when I was telling you and saying that's the population of Australia and New Zealand and some. Well, it's added another million onto that now. And when you think about it, their homes are made from mud bricks. And so when there are floods and they're ruined because of that, they can't rebuild them because they've simply disintegrated. It's an astonishing thing. The Pakistani environment minister has laid the blame very squarely on the West and the affluent nations. He's saying that they are to blame because Pakistan has a tiny impact of emissions. And they're saying that they are to blame, and he's saying they should pay more, quite apart from improving the amount of climate change action that they are doing. And I'm with them all the way. We should be doing so much more and try to help in any way that we can to rehouse or find a solution to them until the floods recede in Pakistan. To the US and the intense and sprawling heat dome that's been blamed for the intense, long-lasting heat wave and drought in the United States and the Western United States is forecast to intensify this week. At the weekend, the temperature in Death Valley hit a new world record. It's been the hottest in Death Valley, 127, I think it was, off the top of my head. I didn't note it down, but it was the new record for the hottest place on Earth. But throughout the West of America, the heat event has set new records just about everywhere. It's centered on California, but takes in four other states as well. It's affecting an estimated 46 million people in an area from San Diego to Mount Shasta. And the high temperature in Los Angeles at the weekend topped 40 every day, and it didn't get cooler at night, which has meant that the authorities are opening up cooling shelters for those people who don't have air conditioners or any way of gaining shade. Then there's a new report from the International Energy Agency that named multinational oil companies as roadblocks to tackling climate crisis. It contained an analysis that found global fossil fuel subsidies paid to international oil companies tripled last year to $531 billion US dollars. Now, that's quite apart from the huge profits that they're making. They're getting that much in subsidies from different governments. These subsidies kept fossil fuel prices artificially low because governments were trying to shield their citizens from surging energy prices from the effects of the Ukraine war, the Russian overtaking of the Ukraine, and to try and rebound from COVID-19 pandemic's lockdowns. As a result of this, for the first 6 months of 2022, The five leading oil companies, that's BP, Shell, ExxonMobil, Chevron, and Total, all made profits of nearly $100 billion each. So we've got this situation where the oil companies are named as being the baddies and hindering the world efforts to try and solve the climate crisis. And yet our governments are giving them billions of dollars to get in the way and try and stop it. It's a ridiculous spiral of stupidity. I think that's the only way I can put it. And this has been pointed out by, of all people, Matthias Cormann. If you remember, he was the former Australian finance minister in the Conservative Liberal Party's government. Now he is the OECD's Secretary General, and he was quoted as saying at the weekend, significant increases in fossil fuel subsidies encourage wasteful consumption while not necessarily reaching low-income households. That's Matthias Cormann saying that from his world pedestal. Having said all that, I've now got some better news. The better news is that the Sunday Age reported fully at the weekend a new initiative from Tasmania that's likely to make Australia a leader in an unexpected field. That's the field of reducing methane emissions from the cattle and livestock. It's estimated that ruminants, that's cattle, sheep, goats, all of the ruminants altogether, produce about 6% of global warming gases. They pass it through either belching or farting, but one way or another, they release methane into the atmosphere. And that's what had Barnaby Joyce at the last government saying to fight climate change, it meant that we'd have to get our farmers to shoot their livestock. That was in order to meet our climate commitments. But now this new Tasmanian-based system is growing a specific type of seaweed that when it's turned into animal feed, it all but eliminates the problem. It was developed by the CSIRO biologist in partnership with an environmentalist, Sam Elson, who's growing crops of the seaweed around his property in Spring Bay, Tasmania. I won't say any more about it now, but you can find it online at theage.com. And it's a really very good article about it. Now, the next Olympics is 2 years away in Paris, and the intention is to make this the first ever carbon neutral Games, a highly ambitious goal, saying that it's in July and August, when the average daytime temperatures in Paris is expected to be well over 20 degrees, in the mid-20s and hotter. I'll tell you more about that next week, because I know I'm coming to the end of the World Roundup. Because finally, our carbon-neutral vegan football team, Forest Green Rovers, they won 3-1 at home against Southampton midweek, but that was a cup game. At the weekend, in their football league game, trophy match, they lost 0-2 against Shrewsbury at home. They're now second from bottom of their ladder. But there are 38 games to go, so there's plenty of time for them to find their feet in their new division. And that is my roundup for the week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Now, our first guest today is Kirsty Bishop-Fox. Kirsty has got an exciting event coming up in the very near future called the Zero Waste Festival, and we thought we'd get her on to have a chat about that. Kirsty, welcome to the Sustainable Hour. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us here, Tony.
No, absolute pleasure. What's your story?
Yeah, so the Zero Waste Festival really started from humble beginnings back in 2018. It started without a lot of intention. And in a sense, the intention was to gather a group of people together from a Facebook group called Zero Waste Victoria. But it very quickly grew into an event which you call the festival, and it's grown each year since. So in 2019, and I think you had me on air in 2019, Yeah, we were in St Kilda and we had our festival there in 2020 and 2021. That they both shifted online. They were meant to be in person in 2021, but I don't think we need to dig into that. But the good news was that the people were able to join in. So this year, Fed Square reached out to us and said, would you like to do the festival at Fed Square? And we were like, ooh. Yes, please. So now we're very, very central to everyone in, well, at least in Melbourne and Victoria, and we're going to be having our festival on Saturday, the 17th of September.
So what happens then, Kirsty?
So at the festival, we've got a range of programs. We've got a speaking program. It starts off, we're starting off with a children's program. So if anyone's got kids, come along at 10 a.m. for Mrs. Ticklebottom and the Plastic Problem, which I believe is full of fun, entertainment and lots of silliness, which is always great to get kids on board. If you want to get a kid involved, just be a bit silly and they'll pick up litter with you any day. Our first panel discussion is how everyday people became legendary waste warriors. And that's going to be an interesting panel. We've got Ross from Beach Patrol, who'll be chatting about what he's been up to. Fam from Port Phillip Eco Centre, Bertie from Boomerang Alliance, and Ricky from Plastics Oceans Australasia. And we'll be getting their insights as to what they're doing. They're doing some wonderful things. You know, we can get bogged down in what we need to do and what isn't going on, but these people are actually out there making really positive change, and I'm really excited to be hearing their stories.
That sounds wonderful. And people just need to roll up to Fed Square. There's no need to book. There's no need to do anything. You just roll up from what time, Kirsty?
From 10 a.m.
Until 10 a.m. when?
Runs till 7.
Okay. So it's a big one.
Yeah. Now, you can just turn up if you're there at Fed Square. You can turn up. But if you can get a ticket, that'd be great. Just so we can just get a bit of a guide to the numbers that are coming and send any email communications to you beforehand. A few reminders to bring things like keep cups and clothes. Yes, we've got a clothes spot happening. Why is she saying clothes? Can we just not wear them? Yes, please wear them, please. Please, but bring the clothes that are in really great condition, that you're no longer emotionally attached to, but are good enough to pass on to a friend or family. And I say that because we don't want tatty things. We've got a clothes swap that people can come and they can bring their clothes and they can go home with, I don't know, some new clothes.
How do they book?
You can go through zerowastevictoria.org.au and get the ticketing, or there's a link through Humanitics, which I can send through to you to include as well.
Wonderful.
Kirsty, what led to this and your involvement in it, or your idea about this whole festival?
My idea about the whole festival, I tend to fall into these things by accident. Yeah. I guess when we first started the first one in 2018, you know, I think I mentioned it was just a little group of people. It was going to be a speed day to zero waster, to chat to like-minded people and have people realise that it wasn't just them and their journey. Sometimes it can feel very isolated when you're trying to do things, and it seems like some people in the world are, but your friends and your family aren't. So we saw this as a platform where people could actually get together and share their stories, share their ideas, and it's just grown and continued from there. So that's how I'm involved, and as an environmentalist who does a lot in the space of waste, it really is close to my heart.
I think what's important is that we begin to not see ourselves as these consumers who don't have a choice. You know, I see a lot of people who are like blocking out. It's like, no, it's too hard. We just got to go and do our shopping and do as we've always done. And what you are presenting here is an alternative in a way that, you know, broaden your mind, open up and come in with some new ideas.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And something else that we're doing in terms of like consumer things, and it's really interesting this morning because my washing machine's just decided to break down. So I'm doing whatever I can to get a repair person come in. I think I've got someone coming tomorrow, but other people might go, oh, my washing machine's broken. It's time for another. not yet, I'm afraid. We've actually got a repair cafe. We're not asking you to bring washing machines. Please don't. But we are asking you to bring like small electrical goods, maybe bikes, children's toys. And we've got the volunteers coming from, I think it's the Brunswick Repair Cafe and St Kilda Repair Cafe. They'll be on hand to fix your broken things in the middle of Fed Square.
How good is that? Yeah. I'd bring a truckload of stuff in there, I think.
You better come early.
Kirsty, what have been your influences along the way? Like this sort of thing doesn't happen overnight.
For me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an environmentalist, and my major is in pollution and health. My work from that's been really quite varied. So I'm in my own space, I'm a sustainability consultant and educator. And I also do help businesses with their sustainability strategies as well too. But one of the biggest things in, and one of the panels that I'll be on is a food waste panel. And I've done some food waste audits and just waste audits in my time. And when you see what people throw out, it's actually, it's quite affected me a bit, I think, in the sense that I do pretty good in terms of getting my bin quite low. And just to see the things that people throw out, food that could have been eaten, clothes that could have been worn, jewellery. I found money in bins, money, cash. I'm sure it was unintentional, but it was there. And so when you see the things that people are throwing out that could have been used or not thrown out, and you know the problems that we have in the world, you just really wonder why. And what I found in terms of the education that I do is that most people actually do want to do the right thing. Some of them want it really easy. And some of them, they don't mind if it's easy or not, but they just need to know. Like, it's like, so how do I recycle this and how do I recycle that? And I found that I've made my life easy because I don't always know how to recycle everything. But if I can actually reuse it or avoid it in the first place, then I don't have to think so hard. And in many ways, that might be a challenge to get started. But when you actually go, you know, if instead of me taking, getting a plastic bag, I take my plastic bags back with me, then I don't have to worry that I can't recycle that plastic bag. So for me, it's made my life so much easier. And I know there are many other people who want to do the same thing. They just want to know how.
There's no such thing as waste. Only stuff in the wrong place. No, there's no such thing as waste. Misusing water's a disgrace. Moved to the city, rented a house on my way to buy a bed. Saw one lying on the side of the road, so I took that one instead. And also found a fridge, a couch, and a big old plasma screen. In the biggest pile of thrown out stuff that I had ever seen. But there's no such thing as waste. Oh no. Only stuff in the wrong place. Yeah. That's right, there's no such thing as waste. That old landfill is a disgrace.
Going back to the beginning of your little statement there about repairing rather than throwing out, this is a wonderful aim for everybody. And I come from the generation where if something broke, you look for ways to repair it. But I find myself now in the second decade of the 21st century where things don't have to break to be replaced. If you've got an old phone, if you've got an iPhone 4 or a phone that's, I mean, I don't know how many analog phones are still lying around and what have you. Is there any way of recycling superseded equipment rather than broken? Can we donate them to other places in the world where they'll use them? Because we don't or can't. And they're not even broken. It's just a waste for waste's sake, it strikes me.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I'm not sure if there is a program in place to support that or not. I'm not aware of that. The trouble with some of the technology, particularly with phones, is that they become superseded and then in a few years they become obsolete in the sense that, you know, they upgrade it. And if your phone is quite old, and I learned this myself, is that the phone was quite old, so it didn't manage the updates that all the apps were having. So I don't know if there is a really great solution for that. It is a challenging time when we're, you know, all using technology. Everyone here listening today is on technology. We're using technology to create this. But I think it's about minimizing what you have and looking at what you can do. But technology with the analog and digital, that's very, very tricky.
I would guess that there are places where they will recycle to get the precious metals out of small appliances like that. But that doesn't seem to work for televisions. Just driving around the streets, you see them out on the nature strips because people have bought the latest television and they put the old ones out and we don't even care about it anymore. They just leave it there for the kids to smash.
Yeah, that's right. There are a lot of medals that come. There are programs like the Mobile Muster programs. They'll do the mobile phones. There's a lot of e-waste collection programs that are happening. And there are some very precious metals that are not just got a high economic value, but certainly have a high environmental impact to get them in the first place. So it is important that we do get those metals back, and there are programs in place to do it. But it is frustrating when you see things that are just dumped out. And a lot of it comes down to it's a lot bigger than what the consumers can actually, as individuals, can do. And I really like to talk about actions consumers can do. And having said that, when we do make a purchase, we can buy the best purchase that we can at the time. And that can take a little bit of research to do. So, for instance, you know, I believe it's all in design. If it was designed to be repaired, if it was designed to be upgraded, you know, if you get like a, you know, a desktop computer, you can take a chip out and put a chip in. If you get a laptop computer, it's not quite as simple as that. And with my work, it's very useful to have a laptop, particularly when I'm taking it with me out of home. So when I got my laptop, I did a lot of research, and the laptop I had is made from a component of what could have been, it was recycled ocean plastics. So it had that component in there, which it's, again, it's not perfect. There are other things in there, but it was as good as I could get at that time. And believe me, when I found this particular laptop, not all the staff at the company knew the details that I wanted to know, because I really wanted to know about the sustainability of how it was produced and to get that best option. So if we think about each purchase and go, right, if I have to buy something new, and in the past, I would also like to add, I've bought secondhand computers and laptops, and that's my preference. But when we were coming into lockdowns, my computer was dying and my world was on computers like everyone else's was. I just had to get something. So this is what I did. So I feel better that I've made the purchase that way. But if we do that with everything, not just a computer, it could be a car, it can be clothing, buy it secondhand, borrow it if you can. Of course, car and clothing is different, but a one-off thing, like perhaps say, I'll tell you a story, like my son's birthday. He had two birthdays in lockdowns, as many kids did. He's 13 now, and 12 is a big one, couldn't have it with his year six mates. He said, Mum, can I have a fairy floss machine for my birthday? And I'm like, oh, there's sugar. And I'm like, you know what, it's your birthday. And I thought, fairy floss machine. Okay, rightio, I'm going to make it be a good birthday, but there's no way I was going to buy one of those new. I knew that there were going to be many people who had bought them for parties or something and had them sitting in their cupboard. And I said, I'll get you a fairy floss machine if I can borrow it or buy it secondhand. He said, okay, you got a deal. He was just thinking about fairy floss. Now, it was quite difficult for me to get one in the sense that I didn't have a long time and things were taking 6 weeks to come from Melbourne, 10 kilometres away. So I put a call out in my local group and said, does someone have a fairy floss maker that we could borrow or buy? And somebody said, I've got a fairy floss maker that I was going to throw out this week. It's yours.
Down the track, I found out that diesel cars can run on veggie fat. Bought a truck and hit the road, smelling like fish and chips. I rescued piles of wasted oil from the back of restaurants. I'd be a fool if I bought my fuel when there's oil nobody wants. Cause no such thing as waste, oh no. Only stuff in the wrong place, yeah. I said there's no such thing as waste. That old idea's gotta be replaced. Now we gotta refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, recycle. Refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, recycle. Now I get my things out of garbage bins and I compost every crumb. I save my seeds and eat my weeds and feed the leftovers to your mum. Gonna build a house from the rubbish tip, gonna keep this planet clean. Reuse ideas that have been around for years to live within its means. Cause there's no such thing as waste, oh no. Only stuff in the wrong place. Squeedy and bitty pretty. I said there's no such thing as waste.
Our next guest is Laura Grufas, and Laura is with Australian Parents for Climate Action. So, Laura, tell us your story, or what's up front for your group at the moment.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I just want to acknowledge that I'm also calling in on Wadawurrung country today. So there's never a dull moment, as everyone knows, in the climate movement, and we've definitely got a lot on our plate. We thought it might have slowed down a little bit after the federal election, but if anything, I actually think it's ramping up even more. So we're an organisation. We've got over 17,000 supporters now linked to our network, and we've got over 25 local groups in every state and territory around Australia. We're all about empowering parents to advocate for stronger climate action within their communities, the media, and particularly politicians. So we've got lots and lots going on. I'm the national community organiser and volunteer coordinator, so I get to work with all these amazing, inspiring parents that are leading their communities and engaging with MPs. We're obviously still continuing our push at a state and federal level for our Solar Our Schools policy. We had over 23 elected representatives pledged to support that policy over the election, which is pretty exciting. So lots of conversations happening there. We've just finished a cost of living survey that we've done with over 1,000 of our supporters. So we know that cost of living is a real issue for everyone at the moment. And we really believe that renewables is a huge part of the solution to providing that relief to families. So we're developing a report, and out of that we'll come up with some policies that we'll take to government and advocate, hopefully, for those to be accepted and really provide some really much, much needed relief to families, and also speed up the acceleration in climate action and to renewables. We've got a duty of care campaign running at the moment, which is basically an open letter to our Environment Minister, Tanya Plibersek, which is really asking her to really have a duty of care for all these phenomenal decisions that she's currently got on her table. You know, we've got a phenomenal amount of fossil fuel projects there for approval. We've heard the State of Environment report. There's a massive response plan that we need to get on top of that, as well as we know that we absolutely have to reform our environment laws, that they're broken and they're currently not protecting the environment like they should. So we really believe that as parents, grandparents, carers, families, we have the moral responsibility and duty of care to care for our young people, and we're wanting the government to show that same duty of care when it comes to their decision making. So highly recommend everyone to get on and sign that open letter, and we're hoping to present that to her at the end of October and create a moment where we can obviously talk about it in the media, but more importantly, talk about it with the minister and see what's going to happen there. Mm. And lastly, but not leastly, we're also looking at how we can mobilise our Victorian supporters. We've got a Victorian election coming up on the 21st of November. So busy. And, looking at how we can also collaborate with some of our amazing climate partners in that.
Laura, I think it's interesting to have this talk about the relationship that parents should have with their children. Because isn't it similar to how we're seeing Pakistan now being flooded and 33 million people suffering for something that really, if we look at the emissions and who caused this whole disruption, it wasn't the Pakistani, it was every one of us. You know, the richer the country and the richer the person, the more you have polluted the atmosphere. And in a similar way, parents and children have a bit of a negotiation or a relationship happening here, because isn't it that the less action parents take at the moment, the less they care, the less they bother to change their habits and so on, the more they're actually passing on some sort of punishment or some sort of suffering to their very own children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. There's, that's a huge piece, that intergenerational, angle and the responsibility that we have. Like, I think, you know, we are climate privileged. You know, we're not on the front lines. So, you know, we've got a responsibility, and I had listened to many podcasts of the great one I was listening to the other day, and making that distinction between responsibility. So it's not responsibility as in guilt, but it's responsibility that we have to do something. And that's really important because, yeah, I know you use the words that people don't care. Now, I'd like to think that that's not the case. You know, 80% of Australians are really super concerned about climate change. I actually think it's something else there. I think people are feeling scared and overwhelmed with this issue. It is such a phenomenal, complicated, overwhelming, systemic issue that people shut down. They don't know how to respond to it. And I think that's where, you know, organisations like ours and many other like us, it's really important about how we have that conversation with them and change that conversation to empower those people to move past that overwhelm and step into action, which is where they are going to find their hope, moving from that anxiety into active hope.
Yeah. Getting back to your duty of care letter, I find that really interesting that you have an open letter to go to Tanya Plibersek, especially in the light of the previous Environment Minister, Susan Lee, of the previous government, actually went to the High Court to prove that she didn't have a duty of care towards upcoming generations. But my real question to you is, how can we find that open letter to add our signatures?
Yeah, absolutely. So I presume Tony's going to include those links in the comments. So, yeah, I really recommend people go on to that, or they can search Australian Parents for Climate Action Duty of Care, and hopefully it will come up in their search engines. And please, you know, once you sign it, share it as well. I think that's a really critical thing. Like, the first step is getting active and participating and signing, but we have to realise the power that we possess within our own networks, and it's not remaining silent. It's about sharing with our networks, expressing our concern. You know, we have to move away from climate change being a dirty word and shutting down conversation. You know, we have to, this has to be part of our regular conversations with people. It doesn't have to be doom and gloom. Let's talk about the solutions. Let's talk about what we're doing. Talk about the inspiring stories like Kirsty, you know, and everyone with her that are trying to create change for a better future within our community. So,
Laura, I'm finding that, well, just from what you've said there, that it's Australian Parents for Climate Action becoming more and more strategic in their actions. So there's obviously a lot of intelligence going on, a lot of intelligent people behind the scenes. Or, you know, I think that probably all started out as ordinary everyday mums and dads that have learnt along the way just what personal power means.
Yeah, look, no, I'd have to say that all the women that founded Australian Parents for Climate Action are absolute change agents in their own right, with pretty incredible backgrounds, whether it was in sustainability or marine biology. Like, they're all obviously part of our board, but very actively, you know, in the climate orgs elsewhere, doing some incredible work. I think, you know, the biggest mistake we can make about power is that we're powerless, right? And I think for parents and society, we've, you know, particularly in the last decade, we have become really disengaged and disenfranchised with, you know, politics, and just felt super powerless in terms about, you know, what change that we can actually lead and create. And I think the election was just a phenomenal example to show everyone what community can do when they band together. And, you know, I really hope people draw on inspiration from that, because to seriously get things moving and to really create a solution for this crisis, we need systemic change, and that must come from government policies and funding to really get this moving. So before I came to Australian Parents for Climate Action, I'd never met with an MP before. I'd never done any of that. I was probably absolutely sitting in that group of people. I was just completely disenfranchised with our government and our political system. And, you know, it wasn't until stepping into that and becoming an active citizen that I realised that actually, you know what, we've got a voice and we can create change. And I'd like to think that we were a part of that, particularly in the local group in the area that I'm in Corangamite, leading into the federal election, like so many other groups.
Exactly, Laura. And you've been very active in that space, also in under the umbrella name, the Corangamite Climate Coalition, which was about gathering the different climate groups in Corangamite, in the electorate called Corangamite, and then to see what could come out of that. There was a conference held, and there's a Facebook page and so on. I would like to hear your opinion about the state election in Victoria in terms of what the Teals could maybe, at state level, what kind of influence they could have on that election. Because I think most of us at the moment, when we look at the Labour government in Canberra, there's a big disappointment there, because we really hoped they said all the right words about climate and how responsible they were going to be if we elected Labour. And yet now we're seeing it's not the case. They are going to open up new gas fields, new coal mines. They are completely rejecting putting a tax on, you know, these discussions that there are, that we are feeling the pressure. People are feeling cost of living is going up at the same time as the fossil fuel industry and the miners are shoveling in higher and higher profits. We heard about, Colin mentioned some figures in the billions. It's always billions of dollars that are shoveled in as profit among those people who are selling us gas, oil and coal. Yet the politicians don't seem to be willing to make any changes there. So what is going to happen now at the state election? Are we going to see a lot of Teal independence? And is there something that each of us can do in that respect?
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you want to get involved with the Voices of Movement, then go online and check that out. That's definitely one way you can do it. Look, I think independence, we're going to see more and more of that entering the political space, particularly after the phenomenal result with the federal election. We've already obviously seen there's been some announcements, obviously, and also in Metro Melbourne, but even down here on the Bellarine where I am, you know, we've got our first independent that's sort of stepped up as well. So, yeah, I think this is the landscape moving forward. This is what we're going to see, you know, people that are frustrated with the two-party system and really wanting some change on a number of different levels. I think independents are here to stay for sure.
Laura, we're finding out, I was noticing more and more here in research that we're doing in international collaborations that are happening. There's Debt for Climate, there's the CITES Rebellion. Does Australian Parents for Climate Action, are they part of a wider international collaboration?
Yeah, sure. Look, we're connected with lots of the different climate groups overseas. So one of the founders actually sort of heads up that international engagement for us. So Parents for the Future Global are quite an integral part of an organisation that we work with. They're all really important, but I'd have to say that 99% of our focus is absolutely on Australia. You know, we're a really lean team. We've got like less than 3 part-time staff. We've got over 100 incredible volunteers that are the smarts, Tony, around those policies, around the incredible submissions that we make that are driving change in their communities, you know, with those local groups. We have to focus our attention and we have to shift the dial of what is happening in Australia. So really important, but I think we need to get our own backyard in order first. So,
Well, look, if it's any help as an input, it's my belief, purely going by the reactions that I'm getting from members of my community, it's my belief that following the Teal push in the last federal election, there is a lot less pushback in the community for people who bring up the subject of the environment. I spent some of the weekend last weekend with family, and I have a son-in-law who's a mechanic. We have had quite firm clashes in the past where he has spoken to me about his belief that electric vehicles are really less environmental than they're played up to be, because he's really basically pushing his own internal combustion business. We've had similar discussions in the past, or as you pointed out at the beginning, it's something that people just say, I'm not going to talk about it. Mm. It's almost a new religion. But at the weekend, that family was showing me very proudly their new plates and crockery, which is made from recycled tyres. And they'd chosen it especially. I hope they didn't choose it especially to show to me. But the point was, we were having a lot of really positive discussions about the problems that we face with climate.
Mm.
And I can't really blame it. I can't really take credit for it. All I can say is that the movement at the last election put climate change in front of many people and has changed people's minds. Mm. Not necessarily me going out and talking about it, but it's there. And it's much easier to bring up environmental subjects.
But Colin, can I just say, like, you're selling, again, this is about people giving away their power. You're selling yourself short. It all starts with the seed, okay? Conversations and having conversations about climate change are so powerful when done in the right way. It all starts with a conversation. You know, you're sowing the seed. We need to move people away from paralysis from this issue into one of active hope. And, you know, by inspiring people with a vision for a better future, which we can have a better future. You know, we can have food security, we can have economic stability, we can, you know, have better health for, you know, our children, for our families, for everyone. There are so many benefits to making this change. And what's really important is that we really focus on that vision, and we, you know, we need to get people from that despair and that overwhelm, and really, I guess, you know, introduce them or direct them to find what their agency is, what the right thing is for them. It might be being a zero waste, you know, hero and champion like Kirsty. It might be, you know, you might be a great talker. It might be like meeting politicians isn't actually as scary as it seems, you know. Going and having a meeting with your politician, telling them about the future that you're wanting for your family, connecting with them on shared values is what's really powerful and what's going to help us shift the narrative when it comes to climate action. You know, there are so many big things that we have to tackle. We have to bring community with us. Like, you know, everyone has to feel as though they're part of the solution.
Look, I couldn't agree more. I think that we can really easily get bogged down on all the problems in the world. And there are many problems in the world, but there are many solutions in the world as well too. And I do a lot of things with kids and students. And I know last week I actually did a keynote for an environmental summit for schools across Australia. And these kids just fill me with hope and inspiration. And it's not that kids should come through and solve what we couldn't, but they're not jaded by what they can't do. They only see what needs to be done, and they don't see the barriers. And if you don't tell a kid what they can't do, then believe me, they'll go through and do it. And adults aren't that different either. You know, it's kind of like I do talks and I say, well, why don't you take your containers with you to the deli? Why don't you take your plastic bags? You do that for your supermarket bag, but what about the bags inside? Why don't you take your produce bags back? And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I never thought I could do that. I never considered that. So it's just these little things that we can do. And, you know, it's like through the lockdowns, people said, I can't use my keep cup. Like, well, my local place, they didn't stop using keep cups. Why did they not stop using keep cups? They'd already made a decision not to dispense disposable cups. So if we do focus on what we can do, it just makes all the difference to the world.
I believe we all came to be here for a reason. To acknowledge the seniors, everything has a season. This season is warm, but it's bringing a storm and a burning urge for our journey to transform. But held in our hand at this grave intersection is a map of the passage for a clearer direction to a permanent culture. It's time we began it with some wise design to realign with the planet. Share skills to rebuild our combined reliance, and with wild guidance redesign our diet. Befriend energy descent and the change in climate, to grow forests of food and a finer environment. Permaculture at this tumultuous juncture is a superstructure that can plug the puncture in a society of anxiety, confusion and greed. This really may be one solution we need to bring back our elementary essence of ethics and walk in earth care, people care, fair share epic. Now's the time to embed it while the temperature's tepid. Let us rise as a choir beside the people who get it.
What is it that's stopping people? They know about it, they're concerned about it. So what is that that's getting in the way for them to just actively be doing something about it? And I really think
there's so many answers to that.
It's so complex, isn't it? Yeah.
Convenience is one of them. If it's not convenient, normalization.
It's actually, if you think about it, we're wanting people to move from awareness to action straight away, right? Like just, oh, okay, this is a problem, go there. But if you think back to your own once you know sort of moment, it wasn't until you actually felt that on an emotional level that you were then really compelled to action. So, you know, intellectually I knew that there were issues and, you know, made up stories in my own head that, you know, there'll be amazing experts all geoengineer and save the ice, you know, in the Antarctic and all that. And I made up all these stories, you know, in my head. So, but intellectually I knew it was an issue. I knew it was a problem, all of that. But it wasn't until I actually sat in that space of vulnerability and really acknowledged the enormity of this issue that we're facing, and asked what my role was in it, that it really, you know, I did go into anxiety around it, you know, for quite a few months. I remember being super anxious until I was like, right, enough, what am I going to do about this? And I leapt into action. And if you think about human beings, we are so good at shelving hard emotions, aren't we? And decompartmentalizing our life, because that's what we have to do a lot of the time to get through it. So, like, I really feel like, you know, we need to honor a part of that journey. I don't know how we do it or the forum in which we do it, but we need to create that space for parents to be willing to sit in that vulnerability and really face the reality of what is upon us. And they're going to be tough and hard emotions to feel, but they're really necessary to be able to be that trigger to spring them into the action that we need to resolve this.
It comes back to well-being. I think that so many parents and people are just trying to get by day by day, that when you're trying to get by day to instill that into kids, and I've been there. I'm not there now, but I've been there before, where I was just getting through that, to think anything more outside of that family unit and what's for dinner that night is just too big.
To guarantee that our future generations' lives are provided the conditions they require to thrive, instead of being deprived of the tools to survive in a biosphere too defiled to revive. So we invite you now to amplify the synergy, devise an inspired, distinctive soliloquy, combining with like minds an adaptable symphony of radical simplicity, balance and symmetry. Whatever your ability, we need your assistance in aid of reclaiming a stable existence. Go summon your gift to this critical hour and deliver wherever they move and empower.
We're almost out of time. I'm just wondering if I can ask both of you, Kirsty and Laura, have you surprised yourself in what you're actually doing today? So if you look back 5, 10 years, what surprised you the most about what you're doing now?
I'm here. I'm here having this conversation. I spent the last two decades working for huge multinationals in marketing. In consumer land. So, you know, for me, I guess my once-you-know moment and epiphany to really get up and do something in the climate movement only came a couple of years ago. So to think that, yeah, I'm now a national community organiser in a climate organisation is pretty, it's pretty phenomenal. And I feel just beyond privileged to have the role that I have and, meet so many inspiring people like all of you on the call today.
And
So something I never, doing this is not something I once would have imagined. I mean, when I went through uni, and look, the main reason I went through uni and I did environmental science was I was going to become an environmental lawyer so I could sue all the buggers who were screwing the environment up. The good thing was I didn't get into law.
But you're not a politician.
and a year after, I actually could have transferred to law. And ironically, it was the environmental policy subject which bored me to tears. So I decided not to become a lawyer. And now it's not uncommon for me to read environmental policy and write my my bit and put in my 2 cents worth. And I agree. Speaking to politicians, they're not scary.
No.
Although there are some politicians who are quite horrid, there are many politicians and the local council. The local council councillors often get overlooked, and the local council councillors are even the most approachable people usually, and they become MPs and become councillors for the reasons people like you and I are sitting here go, you know what, I've had enough and I reckon I can make a difference. And so never underestimate what you can do. And when I started my journey as environmentalist, I never once for a moment thought I would have been becoming an environmental educator and teaching not just school kids, but a lot of adults that I do, the corporates, the councils, they bring me in and I encourage people just to do really basic day-to-day stuff. You know, it's you know that pumpkin and you're throwing those seeds out? Well, cook them up and put them as a sprinkle on top. You know that skin? Cook that up too. It's not waste. And when people start to see these things, I think you started the show this way, talking about the mindfulness and the mindsets of people and well-being. If we actually take a breath, slow down and go, do you know what? You know, in my busy life, I just need to find some time for me. And that me time is going to serve not just me, but my family and the environment, because I'm sitting outside and enjoying it. It just makes all the difference.
Mm. And you're not polluting the air while you're sitting there and taking in a deep breath.
Yeah, our planet gives us so much beauty, you know. If you're sitting here going, what is she talking about? Well, tonight, watch the sunset. Go outside, have your dinner. It depends what time you have dinner, but watch the sunset. Every day it's different. Sometimes it's very yellow. Sometimes it's very orange. Sometimes it's very pink. It's so much beauty. And when you connect to that, you just want to protect it. That's the 80% that just need that reminder all the time. And those reminders, they're there. They're little. And even myself, you know, I have to remind myself and go, you know, I've got that beautiful creek. I'm going to go for a walk. I work indoors. I've got to get outdoors. If we all do that, then it's not a fight anymore. It's our patch. Protect our patch and you can save the world.
We love the earth.
Fantastic. I think we nailed it and we sort of closed the circle to where I started out talking about well-being as being a big word that seems to be coming up in politics and also in our own lives, that we focus more on well-being and the things that make us happy, life, love and laughter.
And dance.
Very important.
Wonderful. Let's end it there. It's a good place to finish, I think. And we can all go our own individual ways now, but individually we'll keep trying to be the difference.
Be the difference.
Be the difference.
Be the difference.
Be the difference. Be the difference. Be the difference. I know the world's gone mad. It's true. Be the difference.
people say that Sweden is just a small country and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. Be the difference. Be the difference. It's all in the future's watching.